Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Our Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things, 50 minutes every afternoon. As the news develops, or at least reveals, that Prince, the pop icon who passed away last year, had powerful opioids in his home, now news is breaking that the most powerful opioid ever known as an elephant tranquilizer is on the streets. So, and we know that the death toll increases from these drugs, and not, as I've said many times, not the problem, but a symptom. We'll talk more about that this afternoon. Also, 8 inmates on death row with potential for execution being halted in Arkansas. Why this, of course, is good for pro-lifers, why we should be applauding this, and why that's where our pro-life bona fides really can't show when we're that consistent. We'll talk about that this afternoon as well. And Mike Pence continuing to flex muscle now in Japan, saying that he will not stop until the nuclear projects of North Korea have come to a complete halt. We'll get into all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost an Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things, 50 minutes every afternoon. It seems as though that the problem, let's put it this way, it seems as though the symptoms are getting worse. I'm not sure that the problem is any different. I'm really not sure that the problem is different. I think the symptoms are worse. We now have a rise of hepatitis and HIV to the point that Las Vegas is saying, well, let's just put in needle vending machines. We need to do something to make this problem, quote unquote, air quotes, less of a problem. The opioid pandemic, really, that we're seeing in this U.S. and the U.S. and across the globe, really, is now to the point that the drugs keep getting stronger and stronger and more lethal. Heroin is so readily available. The prescription medication was able to be controlled. It was cracked down upon. Now, these other drugs that are out there, and the latest, this elephant tranquilizer, which is the most potent of all potency, where a guy just died in Michigan, is that where it was? I'll hold me to that. And now the news that Prince, of course, was his property was found with these opioids, these powerful drugs. Just an epidemic proportion. We're not going to make it better by putting vending machines out there. That's not how we do it. It's kind of like what we say as Catholics. We say we don't stem birth control by giving out, or we don't stem teen pregnancy, unwanted pregnancy, by giving out birth control. That's not how you do it. You don't say, go out there and be safe. Like, go do the drugs, but be as safe as you can, because the drugs aren't safe. Just as the sex is not safe for kids or the unmarried. Because there's consequences to what you do. Now, these are completely sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Just to be clear, do not fit into the same category, right? One is designed for sacramental matrimony. The other should be designed for healing only. And the other is all good anytime, anywhere. Come on, right? I mean, please. Let's understand what we're talking about here. As a music, huge, huge, huge music fan, all genres, especially rock music, but the roots rock, just to be clear. That's my favorite Americana-ish, rootsy, I'm all about it. Anyway, the problem, though, is not this. It's not the drugs. The problem is not that we're getting stronger and stronger drugs. The problem is something is missing in the human person. There's something that is we've yet to truly tap into to say, this is how we resolve this. I was a huge, huge fan of Father Benedict Rochelle. I got to meet him a couple of times. Always valued his approach to everything that he presented. I loved his EWTN show. He was very authentic and especially in person, incredibly authentic. And he was famous because he was a therapist before becoming a monk and a priest. And he was famous for when anyone, I don't care, go back and find these archives. I'm sure they're out there. People would call with the most distressing, most challenging, most heart-wrenching situation, condition, whatever that they were struggling with, dealing with, fighting through. And almost invariably, his response was, what have you done for the poor? Right? What are you doing? What are you doing now? Are you working? Because they're in your community. What are you doing for them? Can you find a way to get out and work with them? It was his antidote, right? Because he knew that by getting purpose in your life, by discovering that, oh, someone needs this, someone really does want this, this is something that I can offer. By doing that, by finding purpose and meaning, now suddenly we have something. It's kind of what I've said before, the unfortunate, I think, misnomer or just improper placement of phraseology or however you want to categorize it. It just ended up, I think, wrong in our Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? This concept of pursuit of happiness means even to the point of using drugs, because we got to be happy. And as I've said before, that disservice that was done could be redressed if we said pursuit of purpose, pursuit of meaning, pursuit of value, whatever. Put something in there that says, there's another way. There's another pursuit. Because if all you're doing is chasing happiness all your life, you're not going to find it. I'm sorry, it's not going to be there. You might be able to find contentment maybe if you begin to pursue purpose first. Because that's the only way any of this is going to work. And trust me, okay? I seek and chase and pursue purpose at pretty much every turn. And I always look for how do I bring value to this equation? What can I do that makes me a person of value? I've had this attitude. I don't know. I don't know that I've ever not had that attitude. Maybe since, I mean, there was a time probably when I was younger when I wasn't always that focused on being valuable. But I want to be valuable. I want to be a person of value in any equation. If you know me, you know that this is what I say to people all the time. Hey, I'll tell you what. I ask a lot of favors. I do. But I give a lot of favors. And I always tell anyone, hey, you just let me know however I can help you out. Not everybody takes me up on that. But think about it. If you've been around me ever, I will always say, hey, you know what? I totally understand. To whatever you can't do for me, if I've asked you for a favor. But I will always respond and back it up with, but hey, I tell you what, just let me know whatever I could do for you. Because I want to be that person of value. I want to be there. Now, not everybody takes me up on it. Occasionally, I'm asked to do things. And generally, I do everything I can. And it's a difficult lesson to teach, as I'm discovering, with a 9-year-old who is pretty self-centered because he's 9. But it's a tough lesson to learn that this is where contentment comes. This is where purpose is discovered. This is how we can avoid those unfortunate conditions that come along of hopelessness, because you think you're so devalued. And believe me, life can devalue you. You will come across relationships. You will come across people that you will invest energy and effort and put a lot of heart into and give a lot of yourself, only to discover that you were not as valuable to them as they were to you. That's going to happen. And unfortunately, that's going to happen back in the other direction because of misinterpreted signals. You name it, a lot of things, a lot of whatever can go into those equations. But you can't hinge your contentment, happiness, value on what that other person thinks about you. You just can't. And so we get mired into these crazy self-destructive cycles. I mean, look at this guy in Cleveland, right? What did he do? He got so hung up on the value that was afforded to him from his girlfriend. This guy was a therapist, right? He worked in the mental health world, in substance abuse cases, whatever. I mean, he knew it, but still somehow got so wrapped up in his value coming from another person that when that value was diminished by that individual, all he knew to do was to snap, and snap in the nastiest of nasty ways, to go and kill someone randomly. That's crazy. Crazy to consider. How do we get to this point? The needle vending machine, I'm sorry, that is not a solution. We've got to find a way to teach our children. I say, my goodness, we got 12, at the very least 13, 12 or 13 years, depending, I guess 13, right? Maybe 14, depending on how children enter into the public school system. We got all that time to form and mold and shape these kids. Oh, and all we're trying to do is crank out STEM, right? Science, technology, engineering, math, that's what it's about. Now, what if we taught them to be people of value? What if we taught them to put aside the whatever disparity that's there, socioeconomic, racial, whatever, get onto a team that's not competing, not a team of competition that's us against them, but a team that says, we're a team that's here to add value to this community, to this organization, to these people, to each other. Why are we not doing that? More to come in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things, 50 minutes every afternoon. So the Trump administration apparently making good on promises, while some, right, have been sort of surprising turns and flips. This one apparently seems to be headed down the trajectory straight from the inauguration speech, buy American, hire American. This was the solution, the simple two-step solution to fix all of the country's woes. This is how it works. Buy American, hire American. You get everything you need. At that point, everything is hunky-dory. And the Trump administration is going to make it much more difficult, especially for tech firms who rely a lot on foreign talent to get the worker visas in place that have been popular. Many of them have been what have contributed to the quote-unquote immigration issue with the worker visa overstays and things of this nature. But through it all, I think we gotta take a little bit bigger philosophical look. And this is what I would suggest, because a popular response is always, well, you wouldn't leave your door unlocked, right? And which I, to my response to that is, well, if somebody's going to come in and clean the place and make my meals, right? And not stealing anything, they're just doing stuff that I don't want to do. That's not such a bad deal. And I kind of think that's what you got if you really look at the big picture of this immigration issue. But on the other hand, if you look at this one, where we're going to make it kind of exclusive to Americanism, right? Buy American, hire American. And bring that analogy down to your household, because this is what we need to do as people of faith, as Catholics. We look at subsidiarity. Subsidiarity says, what's the lowest nucleus of this and how do we manage that best? And if we can take that approach from the micro, we can take it to the macro, right? And we can look both internally, externally, both locally and globally, you name it. It's always a both and. So if we look at this dynamic and we explore it and we ask the question, well, how would this apply to our home? I think what we got to consider is that we're talking about isolationism, essentially. Because what if we decided that we're only going to do what's good for us in our home? So that means outside of that door, it's any man for himself. Our cul-de-sac, our street, our complex, whatever, wherever we happen to be, is all no man's land to us. Who cares? Who cares about what goes on out there? Because it's only us and our four walls and our family. And again, if you want to stockpile a bunch of stuff because you think you're going to need it one day, because you want to help other people out, that's one thing. But if you're just saying it's me against the world, that's not the way this works. I can't always forget. It's like an address, and that's the reason why I can't, because I can't remember addresses, numbers, whatever. I got no brain for that. But it's the J.J. Abrams movie starring John Goodman, where the prepper actually gets his dream come true when there is an attack and he's got these kids down there, kids meaning 20-something-year-old people, and it's a good movie. But I think there's a moral of that as well, as even in that time of challenge, being that isolationist, whatever, being that isolated, maybe that's what I should simply say. But it's a powerful movie in that respect of talking about this. And again, if we're going to prep up and build up and say we're going to do this so we can be there for others, that's one thing. And that makes sense. That's a beautiful thing. That's what propels us, is to say we got a bigger purpose. It's not just about us, because if it's just about us, that is eventually going to implode. It is going to vacuum itself back into our emptiness. And we're going to discover just how alone we are if that's what we're all about, is this type of isolationism. But if we realize that, wait a minute, there are other people on this planet, there are other people outside this door, and whatever I can do to be a person of value, to increase their worth, increases mine. My stock goes up with theirs. But we don't see it that way. For whatever reason, we have this bizarre sort of, we gotta get ours. And again, to me, it's all about how this this stair steps or this progresses or however it's positioned. As I've said a zillion times, I'll always say, if you want to make America great again so that we can be great for others, right? Well, that's hearkening back to the iconic Kennedy speech. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, right? Let's make America great again so that we can be great for others. Now we just put teeth to that. Now we just put a mission to that. Now we put a reason behind that. And it's not just, we're going to be great again, nebulously, floating around in some sort of whatever that looks like. Because what does that look like? I don't know. It looks like dropping bombs in Afghanistan. Looks like shooting missiles into Syria. Is that greatness? We talked about this, right? That's muscle flexing. All that does is say, don't come over here. Do we like those people who are always flexing their muscles? I don't know. Maybe you do. Maybe you're attracted to that. And some are. I guess some are. That's the thing. Some are. Some want to see muscles flex because they get them excited. Me? I want to see integrity. I don't care if you got muscles. Have muscles. I have no problem with muscles. Have your muscles. And if you got them, then have integrity. You don't need to just flex them. It's like what I was talking about yesterday, the difference between the power lifter and the bodybuilder. I don't care. Honestly, physically, I don't care what is in your heart. What do you have that says, I am going to be this person of value? I'm going to be this family of value. And believe me, that one's easier. That one's way tougher than I ever imagined. Because you got headstrong kids who don't get your value structure, even though you're trying to do everything you can and you're doing Catholic school and you're doing all this stuff to try to get the trajectory. You know, kids are stubborn and they want to do their own thing. And they're going to be their own people. But hopefully we can teach them somehow to give of themselves. And I don't know, that, you know, that ethic was just there in me. It always was. And it wasn't like it was necessarily modeled. Like, I didn't follow my parents around the neighborhood looking to help people. But I did. I just did. I know it's like, oh, Leo, what are you? I'm not here blowing my own horn. There were elderly. When I was a kid, there were at least three houses in a row, literally, next to me, where there were people in their 80s. And I would check in on them, and I would mow their grass, and I would help around their house. I would clean up their yard. I just did that. They paid me, granted. I was rewarded for it, but I'm a 8, 7, 6, I don't know. I'm wandering around the neighborhood, so I'm probably 8 or 12. I don't know. I have no idea. But these people would be out on their porches. They would sit out on their porch. And what would I do? And sometimes a couple of my friends, we'd go and sit with them. Because, I mean, they were out there to be out there, right? They were out there enjoying the warmer weather, yes, but generally they wanted some companionship. So we'd go give them companionship. We'd go hang out and listen to their stories. And it was fascinating because I learned so much about my community and about the people that had been there for years before and my house and what it had been and the history of the community and all the things that was once this thriving little place that got cut off literally when the new road, it was like Radiator Springs, right? Cars movie. But I just did that. It was just something I enjoyed. I just was weird that way even as a kid. But what can we do to be that type of value to others? Because I promise you, you're going to get something out of it. It's like what we were talking about before with this horrific pandemic, truly out of control, that we see when it comes to the opioid issue. If we found purpose and meaning and direction, not just a paycheck, not just a, I don't know, big house, vacation, fancy cars, that stuff does not fulfill. I haven't had a big house. I've had nicer new cars rolling right off the showroom floor. I've had those. I've taken big vacations. I've had big jobs, right, with pretty decent salaries. I've had a lot of the traditional stuff. But it's no more fulfilling, and it's certainly not as fulfilling as knowing that you have a purpose and you're a person of value and you are contributing to that. You know, let's make America great again so we can be great for others. Now we have a mission. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Afternoon, we are back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Arkansas with these court decisions now holding up these executions, 8 on death row scheduled to be executed there. And you know, we don't necessarily hear the pro-life outcry for the death penalty. And there's always been this interesting caveat that says, well, we're talking innocent life, Leo. Innocent life. As if there's something that we could do that would deserve death. And certainly this is not, it's not the Christian ethos. We can go back and say all you want to say, and I've been down these roads and had these conversations. Well, the church used to blah, 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 blah. I don't care. I really don't care. I don't care if popes were the ones at the gallows. And the reason why they wore the hood is because they didn't want their face to be seen because it was a pope. I don't care. That does not say that this adds up to being something right. Justice is not served by an eye for an eye. Jesus is very clear that that whole dynamic changed with his teachings. The new covenant, the beatitudinal understanding of how to live, all bets were off. Now, if there were some remnants still of that somewhere along the way, those, I promise you, were completely eradicated with what Pope John Paul II had to say, which was added to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, that technically all but abolishes the death penalty from the Catholic construct. Now, I would go even further and say, I think Pope Francis pretty much did that anyway. He congealed that understanding of we are not people that would condone anything of this nature, because what kind of witness is that that says we embrace the killing of guilty? Well, then how do we determine what's guilt? Well, this is obvious. This was okay. Well, do we draw the line there? It kind of goes back to, you know, the same slippery slope logic. The argument of if we do this, the proverbial inch to a mile. If we apply that same understanding to this, that we do something like marriage, for instance, which I know there are plenty of Catholics who've wanted to argue that. Well, if we give in here, we're going to give in there. If we're going to do this, then where do we stop? Polygamy, bestiality, it's all open game. It's all going to be part of this, which I don't necessarily believe. I think that there are ways of drawing the line at any given point. I don't believe in the slippery slope necessarily. Yeah, for some, the slope is always going to be slippery. It doesn't matter. You step out, you're going to slip. Some of us are just prone to slipping down the slippery slope, whatever it is. We're going to go. It's like the Will Ferrell movie Old School, right? Have you seen this? The beer tastes so good on my lips. You know, and the next thing you know, these old dudes, who that movie's old enough now that they weren't that old, but they're partying with the college kids, right? And it's this slippery slope of things that happen after that. So some of us will always slip on the slope, but there can be a line drawn, and there can easily be a line drawn. And that line should, for us as Catholics, be we don't believe in the eye for an eye. We always talk about the victims' families and closure. Nothing is going to bring the people back. And killing, quote unquote, the monster is not going to do anything. You know, this guy in Cleveland, the manhunt is underway. I'm sure that there are, I know that there are those because I saw it on Facebook just this morning that I've got friends in South Carolina who are saying, okay, be locked and loaded because this guy was supposedly headed our direction. Now, I get keeping an eye out, being vigilant, protecting yourself. But at the same time, this bloodthirsty vengeance that says this guy needs to die. Yeah, what he did was egregious, absolutely. But is he beyond redemption? Has he forfeited that opportunity? Now, praise God for amazing witnesses like Sister Helen Prejean, who's been out there, Dead Man Walking the movie, Susan Sarandon playing Prejean, the nun who has been out there for years counseling death row inmates because she saw it as a calling to say something must be done for these guys. We can't treat them as though they're animals. We can't act like they're non-human. That they're just simply there rotting and wasting away as non-humans waiting to be executed. So in her work, she's decided to treat them with dignity. Treat them as human beings. As people of equal dignity, regardless of what you've done. See, and that's the thing. We may think that we believe in human dignity, but let someone do something egregious and that dignity is now gone. Believe me, I know what emotion feels like. I know what it's like to be so disgusted. I know disgust. I've been disgusted by people. So disgusted. And you're thinking, why? How? How does anyone behave that way? How does anyone have that? It's just despicable behavior, attitude, conniving, whatever. I mean, I can't begin to tell you. I just been by people. And obviously, I'm thinking of at least one individual right now who I feel that way about. I feel that way about. Because I've been on the receiving end of the most bizarre weirdness. And just to be truly despised. But at the same time, do I think that that individual has less dignity than me? He may not behave in a dignified fashion. He may not exhibit and exude dignity in himself. But does that mean I have to treat him with indignity because of his inability to be dignified? Could be that we think that, right? Could be easy to think that. Could be easy to think, well, sure, yeah. That's what this guy has done to himself. Supposedly, whether it's true or not, I don't know if this is ever really, I need to research it because I've heard this forever growing up in Kentucky. There was supposedly this book, law in the books of Kentucky, at least in certain areas of Appalachia, known as the bastard needed killing law, that if someone actually disposed of the guy who was everybody's thorn because he was such bad news, and it just ended up that the guy ended up disappearing, it's all right. We won't even pursue the assailant because the bastard needed killing. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I've always heard that, grown up with that lore. But that's simply not true. It's not true of anyone. Because if we're brothers and sisters, if God has no grandchildren, as we understand, if we're all equal in the eyes of God, if we are truly created in the image and likeness of God Himself, if we're created to be like the Creator, we can do all kinds of stupid stuff. We can stifle. We can abort. We can derail every possible opportunity of living in that light of creativity and generosity and still not for a moment diminish our dignity. It's hard to grasp, especially when people have done egregious things, and you pretty much generally have to have done egregious things to be on death row or be convicted of those egregious things, even though you may be innocent, which has happened. But at the same time, these are people equal in dignity. So we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.